All right. Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Law Hour. Now, the Law Hour is sponsored by Truth Radio Network. It's an educational service in the public interest. I'm your host, George Gordon. The Law Hour is heard nationally 7 days a week on Truth Radio and worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and the Gordon Law School, please go to my website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on anti-Semitism right after this message. You know, if you're earning $50,000 a year and you pay all of your 14 taxes, you get to keep about 41% of what you create and produce. The government gets 59%. So that leaves about $20,000 for you and $30,000 for the government. Now, I think that's just real special. Now, if you think that your share isn't enough for you, then why don't you work twice as hard and produce twice as much and make $100,000 next year? Then go ahead and pay your same 14 taxes, just like you did this year, and you're going to net 24%, and the government's going to net 76%. Now, that means that for working twice as hard and producing twice as much, you're going to net $4,000 more. That's about 8% more net take-home pay than you did this year. Remember, that's guaranteed by Congress and the IRS. And that's why I contend that there ought to be something more intelligent for you and I to do than to work to put ourselves into the top 5% of income earners and then only net 24% of it. Why don't you call today and order my free 4-hour CD package and let me tell you how to deal with that kind of crime. It's 4 hours of entertaining information, and it answers many of your legal questions about taxes and why it is that we pay so much and receive so little. Let me teach you about how to do just that in my tax and status school. It's now available on compact disc for homeschooling. Now, to order your free general law CD package, just call me direct and order yours today. The number to call, 417-273-4967, or you can go to the website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Or you can call direct, 417-273-4967. Anti-Semitism. Well, Mark Twain was lucky. He lived at a time when those things could still be treated with the saving grace of good humor. Twain said, "You will say that the Jew is everywhere numerically feeble. When I read in the Encyclopedia Britannica that the Jewish population of the United States was 250,000, I wrote to the editor and explained to him that I was personally acquainted with more Jews than that, and that his figures were without a doubt a misprint for 25 million. People told me that they had reasons to suspect that for business reasons many Jews did not report themselves as Jews. Well, it looks plausible to me. I am strongly of the opinion that we have an immense Jewish population in America, and I'm assured by men competent to speak that the Jews are exceedingly active in politics." Unquote. Mark Twain. Well, Mark Twain does not specifically specify what it is that he means by exceedingly active in politics. But the activity obviously has not decreased since 1899. Important cabinet and administrative positions surrounding presidents of the United States since the days of Franklin Roosevelt have increasingly been held by members of the Zionist Jewish consensus, and far out of proportion to their admitted numbers in the general population of America. And more to the point, if you tried to josh about there being an immense number of Jews among us now, you would undoubtedly have to be a Mark Twain, first of all, even to get your words published. Because truth to tell, a de facto segregation has developed in our publishing and broadcasting machinery. Jews predominate in the communications field, whether as owners or high-level executives or everyday workers, out of all relation to their acknowledged 2-3% of the population. And as the well-known writer Truman Capote complained when interviewed by Playboy magazine, these people are not the least bit shy about using this power to promote their personal views or to suppress those views of their opponent. Capote said that a Zionist mafia exists in American publishing. 6 million exterminated Jews, the Holocaust. What a stupefying, grandiose topic. The modest writer stands abashed before it like Muhammad at the mountain. O Virgil, Alexander Pope, Leo Tolstoy, where are you now with such themes to be handled? Unluckily, though, epic literature never had to deal with so peculiarly numerical a subject matter, and this thus lacks all the requisite conventions and poetic machinery. In ancient Rome, for example, it was unquestioningly believed that the shape of a crow's gizzard could predict the future. And in ancient Egypt, people were convinced that tiny scarab beetles rolling dung balls up a hillside were the very incarnation of the divine spirit. Doubtless, a well-meaning true believer of those days would have challenged anyone to fisticuffs who cast the least aspersion on the particular mythology that he had been brought up on, trained on, believed in. Now, a little closer to home, we find medieval theologians indulging in some alley cat-like exchanges with one another on how many angels might dance on the head of a pin. Was it 6 or 60? Or even, say, 6 million? And most intriguingly, we find the Babylonian Talmud, it's called the Secret Jewish Law, telling how if you take the ashes of a black cat, burned at midnight, and then place them in your eye, you will then see the demons and all the lost shades dancing around you. That's a quotation from the Babylonian Talmud. So every age, it seems to have its dogmatic fundamentalist creed, something that it wholeheartedly espouses and asserts and believes in, something that cuts across all party and personal lines and summons forth the occasional upwelling moment of reverent silence with perhaps a lump in the throat and a tear in the eye. Now today, the great myth, that cornerstone on which is posited the entire ramshackle ethical structure of post-World War II times, the central metaphor of evil in the modern world, as Time magazine has solemnly pronounced it, is the claim that 6 million Jews ascended as veritable burnt offerings up the chimneys of German concentration camps. We see it chalked up on blackboards from grade school to grad school. We read about it in the newspapers and magazines. Usually every 30 to 60 days, we hear something about the Holocaust. It's been that way for the last 60 years since I've been here. And we hear it voice over soft violins and heavenly choir in the movies and television. And yet, the Zionist Jew Henry Kissinger, with President Richard Nixon in tow, can scurry off to hobnob with the various Marxist empires around the world, which have butchered an estimated 100 million people during the 20th century, and you never hear any protest. But fantastically enough, though, loud hosannas from the news media about the advancing cause of world peace as our political leaders embrace the Marxist leaders and sign new trade pacts over the dead bodies of 100 million people, dead and buried, quietly, softly, without any knowing. Now, this has not been a particularly pleasant book to write, and no doubt will not be the most delightful to read. We have had to take a hard look at so many repugnant historical matters, which would assuredly have been better left buried with the dead past. If the Zionists of today did not make such a pharisaical fuss about their own blamelessness, but then the kind folk upon who insist, looking for silver linings and not dwelling upon the truly ghastly forces that have been at work in this seemingly accursed century, can scarcely gain insight into the hidden causes of events that shape their own lives. Certainly no one is perfect, and there is no people or religious or national group of any kind, perhaps, that does not have a few traits to be less than proud of, some skeletons in the closet that we'd all like to keep hidden. Yet by forcing the issue of persecution within which the 6 million story occupies the biggest niche in post-World War II history, the Zionist Jews have created an impossible situation. Now, either we must accept the claim of brutal and senseless oppressions of a harmless and even saintly minority of many different majorities of all times and places, or else we must reluctantly turn to the possibility that the Zionists may have had at least something to do with provoking whatever problems that they may have encountered. The latter, that is, could they be partly responsible? Could the Jews or the Zionists maybe share a little bit? Well, the latter obviously is the only course open to the fair-minded. Well, at least when we look into history for the last 2,100 years. Now, we will, of course, be accused by some of joining the persecutors and would-be gas chamber proprietors by writing thus: the Zionists and their propaganda play a totally uncompromising game. So for us, it's either for us or against us. At least that's the way the battle lines have been drawn in the past. And few Americans are aware that there is a nationwide secret agency called the Anti-Defamation League. The Anti-Defamation League is an offshoot of the Arch-Zionist American Jewish Committee, which monitors print and electronic communications reaching the mass audience. This ADL enforces strict bans on any objective discussion of this Semitism. All right, we got to take a break here. Hang on, we'll be right back with more anti-Semitism when we return. Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to The Law Hour. I'm your host, George Gordon. Now, The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. We're sponsored by Truth Radio Network. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived for your listening convenience on the Internet at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. You know, the income tax and Social Security programs are not compatible with our traditional American values. These two programs are the second and the eighth planks of the Communist Manifesto. These programs call for a heavy progressive income tax in place of tithing, and Social Security is a social welfare scheme that takes the place of strict liability and individual responsibility. The income tax, for instance, requires of us that we serve two masters in violation of Matthew 6, verse 24. And the income tax requires us to rob God in violation of Malachi 3, verse 8. This income tax requires that we commit idolatry in violation of Exodus 20, verse 3. The income tax requires of us that we use unjust weights and balances in violation of Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. And the income tax requires that we sign contracts with foreign and alien gods in violation of Exodus 23, verses 32 and 33. Social Security. Violates the strict liability statute in Exodus 21, verses 28 through 36. And Social Security violates the 10th commandment by appealing to our lust and greed. And then we're taught to call that income redistribution. Now, the scripture calls it covetousness and theft. Violation of Exodus 20, verses 15 and 17. Well, the God of Israel gave us a better way than that, and our founding fathers followed a better way of life than income tax and Social Security. Now, for more information about tax and status, why don't you call me at 417-273-4967, and be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free of charge. Now, tax and status is available on compact disc for home education. If you're online, you can go to my website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, anti-Semitism. Everybody's afraid of being labeled as an anti-Semite, aren't they? I don't know. I'm not too concerned about it personally. I've been called anti-Semitic. The Southern Poverty Law Center called me anti-Semitic one day, and I wrote them a letter back, and I said, did you know that my name is George Gordon and that I can trace my genealogy directly back to David Bruce, the first king of Scotland in 1320? And that through the British Israel Society, I can trace my genealogy directly back to Judah and the Zerah line of Judah, and from there back to Adam and Eve. That I'm not only a Semite, I can prove that I am a Semite. So, I can speak with some authority, boys and girls, when I say that I'm not anti-Semitic. I am one of them. How do you like that? Now, not everybody can do that, but just because you're not necessarily a Semite doesn't mean that you're necessarily anti-Semitic. I'm going to take exception here with people that call themselves Semites and are not Semites at all, but something else. Now listen, the ADL enforces a very strict ban on any objective discussion of Jewish affairs. And I want to make an objective discussion of Jewish affairs. I don't want you to call me names. I want you to put up names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence, and I want you to prove them wrong. Now, I'm going to present names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence. I'm not going to call anybody a name. I'm just going to say, here's the historical fact, here's when it happened, here's who wrote about it, and here's where you can look it up. Now, if you think I'm lying to you, then I want you to come to me and tell me. If you think I'm wrong, why don't you come to me and tell me? Remember my webpage, georgegordon.org. My telephone number is area code 417-273-4967. Don't use cliches like hate monger, anti-Semite, or some other cop-out. Let's face reality, and let's deal in facts, not fantasy. Now, the ADL enforces this strict ban on any objective discussion of Jewish affairs, and the rule is that no unflattering depiction of the doings of the organized Jewish community, of which the Zionist Rape of Palestine is but one undertaking. That is why in this book we will be given the silent treatment, invented by Rabbi S. Andhill Feinberg of the ADL, and will probably never be advertised or reviewed favorably or unfavorably in any mass media. So I don't expect Dan Rather, you know, to pick up the mantra here, or Tom Brokaw, or Time Magazine. And it's never going to be distributed in the Zionist-dominated retail book trade. You know, so you're not going to find it at Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble. So we're going to leave it to you, the listener, the reader, who no doubt thinks that book burning back in Hitler's Germany was a bad thing, to judge whether this much more devious censorship facilitates the kind of objective dialogue that should prevail in the present explosive circumstances worldwide, which every day poses a greater threat to world stability and world peace, perhaps world annihilation, than any other subject that we can talk about. Now, the longer that anti-Semitism lies in abeyance, the more fiercely it's going to break out. Or so wrote Theodor Herzl. He's the patron saint of the World Zionist Movement. And in his book called The Jewish State, Accepting for the Moment the Misnomer of Anti-Semitism, we can only agree with the thought as an interpretation of history so far in the 20th century. There has been a seemingly relentless pattern of explosions of hostility to the Jews, following cycles of seeming quiet. And Herzl goes on to list his reasons for believing that the cause of all of this violence against Jews lies more within the Jewish community than among the Gentiles. Now, those are Herzl's words, no, not mine. And he said that in his book called The Jewish State. So get mad at him, don't get mad at me now. Now, we would only add our observation that much of the trouble stems from the constant struggle of the Jewish establishment to suppress meaningful discussion of certain less laudable doings, such as the imperialist adventure in occupied Palestine, thus causing unhealthy pressures to build up over there. In other words, a lot of hate and discontent among the Arabs, particularly the Palestinians, Syrians, Jordanians, and Egyptians, and now the Iraqis and Afghans, and so on. All the Muslim world now is rising up, and of course, we in the Western world, the United States and Israel, we possess the nuclear weapons. And so those people are fighting back with what the Japanese did. In a desperation attempt, they created the Kamikaze Corps. Remember that in 1944? I mean, they couldn't overwhelm the superiority of the American forces, the American submarines and battleships and aircraft carriers, and so they put bombs in their airplanes and crashed their airplanes into our ships. Well, that's what you have here with the Arab suicide bombers. You know, they don't have any sophisticated weapons. They don't have, you know, Apache helicopters and C-130 gunships and things like that, so they commit suicide and take 20 people at a time. Now, we've been watching that over the past 5 or 10 years grow in intensity. So, shouldn't we ask some questions about, gee, what's causing this? We didn't have it 100 years ago or 200 years ago. You know, the Muslims were out there running around the desert, riding their camels and having a good time doing whatever it was that they were doing. But today, they're riding around on our buses and blowing them up. So, it seems like to me a fair question, you know. What caused that? What made these people so mad at it? Now, of course, it goes without saying that we're not talking about all Jews when we refer to the Zionist establishment. You will remember that I've talked very hospitably toward Jews on this program for many, many years. I had one as my company controller, and I'm very familiar with Jews and a little bit less familiar with Muslims, and we're not here to take sides one way or the other, but to stimulate your thinking. Let's look at the facts. And then, you're an adult, you can make up your own mind. But I don't think you can make up your own mind, and I don't think you can make a rational decision if you don't have all the facts. And up in Canada, for instance, if you raise this subject, well, you're going to be indicted for a hate crime or something on that order. You know, the Jews have responded to criticism of their policies and their programs by insisting on legislation aimed at stifling free speech. I think that's wrong. I think that's dead wrong. I think that the Jews need to be exposed for just exactly what they are and what they've done. And I think the Muslims need to be exposed for what they've done, who they are, and what they're doing. And I think we should then make a rational decision. You know, what do you want to do about it? How do you want to handle it? Rather than hide it behind hate crimes and say, shut up, we don't want to hear about it, or burning books like Hitler did back in the 30s. The Jews have a more sophisticated methodology. What we're going to do is we control print and the news media, so we won't publish it. So you have to go to the underground press or to the website. Now, you know, you've got the World Wide Web. Now, government's getting very involved in the World Wide Web, and they want to control it, just like they do the media. And they will. The time will come when they'll take over and they'll control it, and they'll stifle free speech there, too. Free speech is something that the real hate mongers, that the real criminals can't stand. They just can't stand having the light of day brought upon their wicked and evil activities. And that's the purpose for hate crimes legislation. It's the purpose for stifling free speech and not printing somebody's paper. It's not because what it is these people have to say won't hurt them. If it wasn't going to hurt them, well, then why not print it? But if it's going to hurt, well, then, geez, I don't want anybody to say that about me either. The difference is that if you've got something to say about me, I think that you ought to have the right to say it. So get right out there and say it. But give me an opportunity to respond. And I want to give you an opportunity to respond. That's why I issued my challenge. Now, don't sit here and write me emails and say, you anti-Semitic pig over there. I want you to present your evidence. I want you to say, no, Ulysses S. Grant didn't say that. But here's what Ulysses S. Grant did say, and I want you to cite me your authority. I want you to say, no, George Washington didn't mean that. Here's what George Washington meant. I want you to refute my argument. I want you to prove me wrong. I want you to cross-examine me, and I want you to get that evidence. Would you do that? All right, now let's go on here. Remember, it goes without saying that we're not talking about all Jews, and obviously all do not really support Zionist colonialism, or more of them would be willing to perform the Aliyah or rising by immigrating to Israel, which is demanded by more New York and Tel Aviv leaders. Said you don't find people leaving New York to go to Tel Aviv, you find 20,000 of those Jews a year coming to the United States. Instead, there has lately been a growing net loss of population from occupied Palestine, leading one to wonder whether there is not some truth in the old joke that a Zionist is a Jew who wants some other Jew to go to Palestine. Now, experience and observation suggest a hard core of perhaps 10% of the Jewish community who fully commit themselves to the mistaken projects of the ruling oligarchy. They follow, just like the Jews did in Jesus' day, they follow the official party line. Now, the other 90%, are more or less coerced into supporting these things as a small minority of anti-Zionist Jews such as Rabbi Elmer Berger or A.M. Lilienthal and Benjamin Friedman have so long maintained. Suppression has been the fate of revisionists. For example, untrammeled non-establishment history in general, and nowhere more so than with the heavily tabooed investigation of the 6 million myth. Now, in English, the literature begins with a little volume first published in 1969. It was entitled The Myth of the 6 Million. The author chose to remain anonymous for understandable reasons, considering that he is a revisionist, historian, and professor at a leading and quite liberal West Coast university. Next, a booklet entitled Did 6 Million Really Die? It was produced in England by a publisher affiliated with the National Front political party. This seems to have been largely a refurbishment of material from the previous study, breaking very little new ground. By far the most thorough and the most detailed of these analyses of the technical aspect of the myth of the hoax of the 20th century by Dr. A.R. Butts. He's a professor of engineering at Northwestern University. Now, these books, together with a number of books published in Europe, in European languages, have done an excellent job of examining this rickety evidentiary structure of the gas chamber story, per se. And the present volume is conceived by this committee as a supplement that weighs the credibility of age-old Jewish atrocity tales, of which the 6 Million story is but the latest and the greatest. But this tale of woe from Judaism goes back 2,100 years, so this is not something new. And when we look at it in the light of several historical, cultural factors that deserve to be known better than they have been, the Zionists and their friends do not want the non-Jewish world to learn about these forbidden matters that we're about to discuss, for reasons that we hope will quickly become very apparent. This is a book called The 6 Million Reconsidered, published by the Committee for Truth and History. Now, there's been a number of people jailed over the past, 10 years or so. I know in Canada, it was quite a little brouhaha going up there right now over a guy that wanted to deport back to Germany because he believes that 6 million people, 6 million Jews, didn't die in the concentration camps. And I want to point out that there was a time when the Roman Catholic Church taught that the sun moved around the earth and that the world was flat. They too stifled free speech, just like we see going on today. They did not want anybody else to come along and say, hey, wait a minute, let's investigate this flat earth. And why will the back more when we return? Back for the closer. You're listening to the Law Hour. I'm your host, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour is sponsored by Truth Radio Network. It's an educational service in the public interest. Now, your support of Truth Radio Network and our advertisers and sponsors is very important to us. So, for more information about Truth Radio Network programming, please go to our website at truthradio.com. That's truthradio.com. Now, Truth Radio Network is a private volunteer organization. We're established as a private charitable trust for the purpose of exercising and defending free speech. Truth Radio is not a 501c3 tax-exempt institution, and donations are not tax-deductible. If they were tax-deductible, we wouldn't be free to tell the truth. Now, we rely instead upon the financial support that comes from you, our listening audience, to help us pay for our satellite time, internet, audio streaming, and our overhead costs. So we thank you very much for that financial support, which comes through your donations to Truth Radio here at P.O. Box 344 in Napomo, California, 93444. That's Truth Radio, Post Office Box 344, Napomo, N-I-P-O-M-O, California, 93444. All right, here's tonight's wise old saying. Winning isn't everything, but it's way ahead of whatever's in second place. All right, we're talking about this anti-Semitism. You ever notice that we can talk about blacks and Hispanics? We're not called racist because we talk about race, are we? I mean, we're not perverts because we talk about sodomy. We're not whores because we talk about prostitution now, are we? Now, there are people out there that have their views on prostitution and birth control, and they have their views on abortion and anti-abortion. And, we always, in this country at least, have given people the courtesy of the First Amendment concept of free speech. If you want to practice sodomy, okay, well, you can go ahead and do that, but we're gonna say that we're opposed to it, and here's why. But did you ever notice that the people that are doing the acts, that is, the abortions, work harder to stifle the speech of those who are in opposition to them? Now, so far, I haven't heard anybody who's in the anti-sodomy movement moving for some kind of legislation which would stifle the free speech of the sodomites, but I hear the sodomites seeking hate crime legislation to stifle the free speech of their opponents. You ever notice that? That's what we hear from the Jews. You don't hear the opponents of Zionism coming along and saying, well, now those Zionists should be shut up and throttled and they ought to be locked up and they shouldn't have a right to speak. But you find it coming from the Zionist movement. They want to shut up all of their opponents. They don't want them to come out here and speak about the 6 million supposedly gassed here in Germany. And my question was this. I was born in 1939. So when this event was transpiring from 1939 through 1945, I was just a little kid. And then I saw the movies and the pictures, just like you have, you know, over the last 60 years. I've been watching this, you know. And there's the debate. And, you know, 25, 30 years ago, some guy from, I think it was an engineer from Northwestern University, happened to be over there at Auschwitz, and he took a look at it, and he was a designer. He was one of the guys that designed the gas chambers for the state prisons to gas people to death. So he was an expert on gas chambers. I read his book 20 years ago. And he wrote a pretty convincing argument, I thought, that these crematoriums and these ovens and gas chambers that are described over here as Auschwitz actually weren't gas chambers. They were delousing chambers. So here's my question. What difference does it make what a bunch of rabble-rousers believe if it isn't true, if it's a lie? For instance, when Leonardo da Vinci comes along, or Galileo and these guys, you know, they come along and they say, hey, listen, we think that the world revolves around the sun, and the Catholics just got really uptight about it. Not the average Joe Sixpack Catholic down here in the village. I'm talking about the Catholics up in the, you know, the bishops, the cardinals, and the popes. You know, they just come unhinged and went ballistic and said, God, that's blasphemy. We need to kill people that disagree with church orthodoxy. Well, how has that played out over the last 500 or 600 years? I mean, the truth actually did come out that the earth revolves around the sun doesn't revolve around the earth, and now that it's all said and done, what the hell difference does it make? You know, a lot of people lost their lives over that controversy. I'm sitting here asking the question today. So, 500 years from now, what difference is all this going to make? Why is it necessary to stifle a bunch of crazy lunatic fringe fools that believe that 6 million weren't killed in the ovens in Nazi Germany? I mean, you and I know that that's true, and that they were butchered over there by those dirty German butchers. So why would we want to stifle the free speech of a bunch of rabble-rousers and nuts, fruitcakes, who believe that it didn't happen? How does that advance the cause that we're trying to advance? If I'm trying to prove to you that these dirty Germans killed 6 million of our people over there, my question to you is, how does silencing our opposition over here advance our cause? Doesn't it in reality say to everybody they've got to have something to hide or they wouldn't want to shut us up? You know, the truth of the matter is, the Jews lend more credibility to the arguments espoused by the revisionist historians than all the revisionists could muster standing on their own soapbox. If I went down to my local restaurant and stood on my soapbox out in front and started beating my tom-toms and saying, come ye, and listen to me, nobody would pay any attention to me. But if I could get somebody to come along and knock me off my soapbox and arrest me and drag me off to jail, so that I could get my name in the newspaper, and George Gordon was arrested in front of the Isabella Cafe for pounding his tom-toms and preaching his message over here, I would get 10 times more publicity. And the Jews create more publicity for this revisionist movement by trying to incite Congress to passing these hate crimes laws and legislation than they would if they just shut up and ignored them. Or better yet, if they came back and answered them with the truth. Assuming, of course, they can. Now, of course, if they can't come back and answer these arguments with facts and truth, well, then what would be wrong with saying, well, gee, Hitler didn't kill 6 million, he only killed 2.5 million? Wouldn't that be bad enough? I mean, that's pretty bad, isn't it? 2.5 million murdered is pretty bad. 500 murdered at My Lai in Vietnam was pretty bad. That drummed up a few headlines, didn't it? The question arises, well, was it 6 million or 16 million or was it 2.5 million? Were they gassed to death or were they shot? Now, there's no doubt that a bunch of people were shot. A bunch of people were murdered. A bunch of people were gassed. I'm sure that a bunch of them were hung and so on. And what these people are trying to show is that these same Jews in control of Soviet Russia killed 100 million people. The Chinese killed 47 million. From 1949 to 57, the Chinese killed 47 million people. 8 years. Well, that's pretty significant, wouldn't you think? Joe Stalin summed it up quite nicely. He said, when somebody dies, it's a tragedy. When a million people die, it's a statistic. You can't put a face on 47 million Chinese. You couldn't care less about 47 million Chinese. But when your granny dies and you go to the funeral and you look at your dear old granny in the casket, well, that's a tragedy. Ain't it? Well, in the beginning was the Word, and today humanity is scared silly of it. The Word has a vaguely professional, even pseudo-scientific sound, but it is virtually a registered trademark used by irate Zionists against anyone who they find not to their liking. Now, the fact that the Word is utterly incapable of any rational definition does not by any means deter its users so long as it works. Zionists all too often lack a sense of the ridiculous where their doings are concerned. Now, James Abrzek, a United States senator from South Dakota, took note of this peculiar phenomenon in a speech before a gathering of Democratic Party leaders on March 27, 1977. Noting that the Israeli lobby wields extraordinary influence in Washington, Mr. Abrzek pointed out that it is easier for Americans to criticize their own government than for them to criticize the Israel entity in Palestine because critics are fearful of being assailed as anti-Semitic. Just as we have seen U.S. presidents wrap themselves in the American flag in efforts to stifle criticism of their policies, so do we see a foreign country wrapping itself in its state religion so that criticism of the state or its policies is perceived as a form of racism. Well, the senator said in receiving a standing ovation from the audience attending the Jefferson Jackson Day dinner in Denver, Colorado, Senator Abrzek is to be commended for his candor. Unfortunately, it seems to have cost him his political career, just as happened to the distinguished ex-senator from Arkansas, J. William Fulbright, who on April the 15th, 1973, declared on the television program Face the Nation that Israel controls the United States Senate. Now, perhaps we should not be too surprised, therefore, to observe the anxiety that so many other less resolute public figures seem to suffer at the mere thought of being rubber-stamped with this nastily sibilant word called anti-Semite, which is itself a sort of etymological hoax. Too many of our leaders begin to perform the most amazing gymnastics and to mouth the most embarrassing hypocrisy to placate the journalist watchdogs cued by the Zionists' Anti-Defamation League and operating in every newspaper and television editorial room. They seem to fear that the slightest slip of the tongue will bring down the feared anti-Semite anathema from the media masters, who in turn are intimidated by skillfully wielded pressure from purchasers of advertising space. Oh my Yes, it's the advertisers. And so we've now come full circle. Whereas the great kingdoms and empires of yesterday had their laws of heresy, a new imperialism has now arisen, more potent heresy of condemnation, even if it's equally absurd, called anti-Semitic. Hang on, we'll be back with the power from the law hour from the Sunday evening. Stand by, we'll be back in 2 minutes after the hour. Get ready for one question. 5 minutes for his editorial. We'll be back with more on anti-Semitism when we return. Don't go away.